Hi there, and welcome to Sentinel Watch. I'm Jenny Sawyer. Today's guest is Julie Ward. Julie is a Christian Science practitioner and teacher from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, Julie. Thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, so glad to be with you, Jenny.
Well, I'm really excited for this conversation. You know, I was recently at a local bookstore pawing through the cookbook section, which is one of my favorite things to do. And I was really struck by how many cookbooks these days seem to do with health, and just really got me thinking about this whole idea of food as medicine.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to talk about today. Why don't you start us off by telling us, why is this topic of interest to you in particular?
You know, my background in my growing up years was in the world of dance. Mm. And during those years, life was just one big diet. Mm. And over the years, I must have done every diet in the book. I did the Mayo Clinic diet, you know, the South Beach diet, you name it, I did it. And what I found, Jenny, was that each one promised something that it could not give me. Mm. It promised me beauty. It promised me health. It promised me strength. And when I would start in on a diet, I would just be so full of hope, and this was going to be the day my life changed. But it never fulfilled the promise. And that was because, I think, it was always based on the wrong premise. The premise was that health, strength, self-worth, and beauty live in matter. And they don't. Health, self-worth, beauty, strength, these are qualities of God, and these qualities of God can only be seen as our sense of life as spirit grows more pure, more beautiful. And then this sense that, oh, if I eat more of this or less of that, if I have this many calories or that many calories, falls away.
Mm. Let's dig a little deeper into that. So that's a pretty radical idea that health doesn't really have to do with the body or what we consume, our exercise regimen. How did you come to that conclusion?
By beginning to see health as wholeness, that the true health is actually in thought. Mary Baker Eddy says in her book, Miscellaneous Writings, the true consciousness is the true health. And that, as you said, that's a radical statement. And yet the true health is not to be found in changing the matter in your life. It's to be found in becoming more and more conscious of God with us at all times, more and more conscious of the goodness and the beauty and the glory of God always expressing itself to us and through us.
So when you mentioned Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, that tells me that you, what, were raised a Christian Scientist or came into Christian Science as an adult? What was your familiarity with her and her writings?
I was raised as a Christian Scientist. I was in one of those mixed families where my mother was a student of Christian Science, my dad was not. And my sisters and I were exposed both to my dad's beliefs and my mother's. But we did attend a Christian Science Sunday school. And as we were growing up, we had many wonderful healings. And to me, the way of life of Christian Science offered so much joy, so much sweetness and tenderness that ultimately that was my choice.
Mm. That's really interesting to hear, Julie, because I think that we can feel in our day-to-day lives, even if we, for example, are practicing Christian Science and have seen proofs of healing and, you know, believe some of the fundamental ideas, that it can kind of feel like that tug of war between two systems of belief. We have what the world tells us is what's needed for health, as we've started talking about, you know, certain diet or certain types of exercise or even eating at certain times of the day. I've heard a lot about that recently.
Yes.
Versus a concept of health that's really based in our understanding of God and who we are as God's children. And I wonder if, just because not everybody may have that as a point of reference, can you just help us understand a little bit more, how were you coming to know more about God and your relation to God during this time that was helping to start to shift your perspective about health?
You know, I particularly loved this during my teenage years because that was a lot of tugging and pulling. and I remember there was one sentence from Science and Health with the Key to the Scriptures, which is written by Mary Baker Eddy. And I had a wonderful Sunday school teacher who had us memorize a sentence every week from that book. And my favorite one said, "Hold thoughts steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true, and you will bring these into your experience proportionably to their occupancy of your thought." Mm. And that made sense to me, that as I focused on that which was enduring and good and true, that that would actually become my experience. Now, I'm not talking about this simply as a sort of mental exercise, because it must be a spiritual exercise, a true desire to see what is spiritually true and to give up one's own habits and taste and opinions, the things that hold us in a material sense of life.
Mm.
But I did see that. I saw that sort of proportional sense that as I held fast to this presence and power of God, who is infinite good, that my experience became more progressive, more harmonious, more joyful.
Mm. I wonder if you could take us through, now you as a dancer, I danced for a very short time when I was a kid, but even then, you know, one of my most distinct memories is the fact that just mirrors are everywhere.
Yes.
Just no escaping seeing yourself from every single angle.
It's terrible.
How did you, in the midst of that, start putting these ideas into practice, just because you're so confronted with images that seem to be about physicality?
Yes, you are. And it can be hypnotic. You can get addicted to that mirror.
Mm.
And I'll tell you one thing that helped me. In the studio where I studied, there was this whole huge long wall of mirrors. And in this wall, there were two mirrors that apparently had not been installed correctly. And we call them the fat mirror and the thin mirror. Because if you stood in front of the fat mirror, you looked about 10 pounds heavier than you normally would be. And if you stood in front of the thin mirror, you'd be 5 or 10 pounds lighter.
Mm.
And oh my goodness, everybody fought to stand in front of the thin mirror. And I think that's hysterical because, you know, it didn't make you any thinner.
Mm-hmm.
It simply gave you the impression of being lithe and willowy. And we all liked ourselves better in front of that mirror, even though intellectually you knew you hadn't lost weight.
Right.
Or nor had you gained weight if you stood in front of the fat mirror.
So how did that become kind of a spiritual analogy for you?
Because I could see that my concept of myself was not about some real measurable sense of matter. That concept changed along with the viewpoint.
Mm.
I'll tell you something else about that. I had a friend who had a vision problem. And when she looked in the mirror and there were lots of girls with, you know, we all had on black leotards and pink tights, she often couldn't tell which one she was.
Mm-hmm.
And one day she thought she had had just a glorious day of dancing and she liked how her body looked and everything was just wonderful until she realized she had actually been looking at someone else in the mirror.
Oh.
And I think often that's what we've done. We've looked at someone else in the sense that we've looked at a sense of ourselves that isn't who we truly are. You know, we've looked at ourselves in terms of how many pounds, how many inches, how many years, you know, all of these mortal measurements. But these mortal measurements don't tell us who we are.
Mm. Were you able to make the switch while you were still a dancer to really feeling more freedom from those body image issues that had, pun intended, weighed you down?
Yes. And it literally was like weighing down. But I want to tell you this, that this actually took place over years. Mm. Because in the years that I was performing, our director had a very, very strict sense about weight. There was even a number that you could not pass and still go on stage. And there was a lot of discussion about that in the dressing room. We were constantly weighing. At the point that I was in college, I was weighing 5 or 6 times a day. I would do it, you know, before and after my 100 crunches, or, you know, after a meal, before a meal. And it was almost an addictive sense of checking in constantly to see how I was. And so what was happening is I would go on these diets. I would lose, let's say, 8 pounds, and then I would gain back 10. Mm. And then I'd lose 7 pounds, and I'd gain back 5. And this kept going that way, and my weight was quickly approaching the weight where I could no longer go on stage. So a time came when I was just at my wit's end. I called my mother, and I asked her to pray with me about this. And she gave me 3 things that really helped me. The first, she said, step off the scales. Stop weighing to see, you know, am I having a good day? Am I having a bad day? Am I a good person? Am I a bad person? So number one, step off the scales. The second thing she said was feed hunger, not appetite. And this was a big deal for me because often I was eating for the wrong reasons. I was eating because I was sad. I was eating because I was bored, because I broke up with my boyfriend. You know, whatever that was, I thought I was finding comfort in food. Mm. And I had to learn that food was not the source of my comfort or my identity. And then the third thing she said was, just eat it once. And what she was referring to was that because there was so much conversation around food at that time, that, you know, we would read all these cookbooks and these books about how to lose weight, and we would discuss it, and we would plan and analyze, and then we'd eat it. But then we'd go back and say, oh, I can't believe how much I ate last night. Oh, dear, I should never have eaten that ice cream. And then you had all the guilt and self-condemnation. So as I started to do those things, things started to be a little more balanced for me. And they became gradually more a right sense of eating to live and not living to eat. Mm. And things got better. But it was like this monkey on my back. It was always there, that question of weight. So at one point, I called a Christian Science practitioner and said, I need some more help on this. And I'll never forget, he said, I'm going to give you a miracle diet. And I thought, oh, boy. And you know, the miracle diet was one verse. And it was Jesus' words, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me. And I hung up the phone and I thought, I have no idea what that has to do with my weight. You know, I don't know how to put that into practice. But I knew it was important. And so I started to work on this idea of just doing God's will. What was God's will? Not always, what do I want? What do I think? What serves me best? But how can I worship God more? How can I honor life and truth and love? And things began to even out, not just with weight, but with life. Mm. And one day I was reading the Bible and I came across this wonderful recipe for God's will. It's 1 Thessalonians 5:16-18. And I still love this recipe. Rejoice evermore. Pray without ceasing. In everything, give thanks. For this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. And when I got to that, oh, I finally know what God's will is, you know. And I love that idea. And to this day, that has been my sense of this is what balance is. This is what health is. Rejoicing evermore, praying without ceasing, in everything give thanks.
You know, it's a pretty radical concept because I think a lot of the stuff around weight and sort of all the self-worth issues that are wrapped up in that pull us toward thinking about ourselves incessantly. But yes, it seems like what that Christian Science practitioner pointed you to in Jesus' words, and then the passage that you just quoted, it points us toward God. And that is kind of the radical reorientation, that when our thoughts are more on God and we're just, I think, feeling more full of what we truly are, which comes from God, it seems like that's what helped you more naturally make that shift.
It's exactly that. It's turning away from self and turning toward God. Right about this time, my mother gave me a little counted cross stitch that just had the words, God first. And I still have it right here in my office, and I think about that all the time. Ooh. If God is first, if God is the center of our life, then the constant up and down and back and forth of how am I doing? Am I better? Am I worse? How do I feel about this? What do I think about that? Begins to fade away a little bit. And the more it fades away, the more we know who we are.
Mm. You know, another thing that occurred to me as you were talking, Julie, is that it seemed like for a really long time, maybe most of your trust was in the scale.
Yes.
And part of this shift was also moving toward trusting God, having that be the primary kind of focus of your trust. And I really like that because I think with something like weight, so often it seems about us having to control something, to find balance, to eat the right foods, do the right things, in the right order perhaps, versus having a trust that everything comes from God, and that includes things like balance, the comfort that you felt that you were looking for in food, being graceful, having strength, that all of those qualities truly flow from a divine source, not from something that we're having to personally manipulate.
That's it. That's it. Giving up that belief that we have to control everything and being so aware of love's sweet control over every tiny detail of our lives. I think that as we grow in that wonderful conviction that divine love controls every detail, that we have a sense of buoyancy and satisfaction that we just can't find jumping from one material belief to another.
Mm. Let's dig a little bit more specifically into the food aspect, Julie, because I think, you know, for some people, it may not be about weight exactly, but it might be about trying to find a better sense of health or just kind of getting caught up in this feeling that what we eat really determines who we are, for better or worse. I mean, I certainly remember discussions in college. I remember one friend coming to lunch one day, you know, we were in the dining hall and she brought her tray over and she'd made herself a big salad and she said, "I'm being good today." And, you know, there's certainly, I think, an attachment between certain types of food and virtue, certain types of food and health, mm-hmm. and even that a lot of food today has been turned into, you could say, a form of medicine.
I agree. I think that more than ever, that sense of food as medicine wants to dominate our choices. And again, where is our health? Where is our purity, strength? All of these qualities are qualities of God. And we all have them. Every single one of us has that full spectrum of God-like qualities, but they must be acknowledged and seen as ever-present, not something that some people have and others don't. But I do think that belief that food as medicine is something that most of us have dealt with and continue to deal with. And it's why the other side of that coin is that we seem to have more of a sense that food can harm us, that there's certain kinds of food that cause reactions. There's certain kinds of food that cause us to be ill. And no, we must take away the belief that there is a cause apart from God. God is the only cause, and what God causes must be entirely good, because God is entirely good. So he can't cause something that's unlike himself.
What would you say to somebody who says, well, Julie, it's demonstrably true that, you know, certain types of food are better for you?
Well, first I would say that always changes. We're always remembering things. You know, I remember a period where we worshipped oat bran. I don't recall why, but we were all eating oat bran. And then they turned around and said, oh, that's not good. You know, there were times that certain foods were considered almost poisonous that now we are very happy to eat. And so that rests in the human mind, and it can be very firmly held conviction in the human mind. But I believe that we all must take away the power of food either to help us or to harm us, and know that we can eat when we're hungry. We can enjoy it. You know, we can have a balanced amount of food, but that we need to neither fear food nor worship it. And I think we've erred very much on the side of worshiping food these days. And if we worship God only, the right expression of eating will be normal and joyful for us. And we won't fear it, but we also will not give it the power to give us health.
You know, it's so interesting to hear you say that, Julie, about how they're really two sides of the same coin, because it's making me think about this healing I had, oh, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago now, where I was supposed to go on a trip to see some friends who I love very dearly, and they were so excited to show me their city and, you know, all the fun restaurants and things like that. And a couple weeks before this trip, my stomach just started hurting so much, and I have to admit, my mind whirled with various possibilities about what could have caused it. And, you know, all sorts of beliefs about what food can do to you just seemed to be parading through my mind. And yes. I was praying about it. And this one day, the clearest insight came to me, which was, I was afraid of this trip because I was afraid of eating all of this rich food at restaurants day in and day out. And what's a socially acceptable way of getting out of doing that? Well, your stomach hurts too much to do it. And it was so clear to me that all of these beliefs about food, you know, gluten intolerance and things about fat or sugar or whatever, and all the different things that had just seemed to pour into my mind when my stomach was hurting, just had nothing to do with what I actually needed to deal with. And what I needed to deal with was just this fear that food could do something to me, either be the source of a good time or be the source of a bad time.
That's great.
Yeah. And with that realization, just the whole issue faded out pretty much immediately. And, you know, we actually did end up having a great trip with them and we had a really fun time, but food was no longer kind of this god in my mind, you know, capable of causing something one way or another.
That's it. Doesn't it all boil down to this whole idea that God good is the one only cause, and that there cannot then be a fear of food or of anything else that claims to be a cause? You know, this is interesting. At one point, and I don't know, to be honest, if this seemed to be food related or not, but I had a period in my life where I would have sort of these really unhappy skin breakouts. It seemed to be some kind of reaction. And I had called a Christian Science practitioner to help me. And she just said one thing, and I will never forget it. She said, Julie, you are sensitive only to good. And I loved that, because I had seen myself, you know, kind of that artistic sensibility that says, you know, you have the highest highs and you have the lowest lows. Mm. And that I suffered when I saw other people suffer. And I just began to pray with that acknowledgement. I am sensitive only to good. I cannot be sensitized to this belief that there is evil out in the world and that I suffer from it. Mm. And, you know, in a matter of, it was just days, all that skin irritation was gone and I never had it again.
Mm. That really takes you back to that one cause idea yet again.
It does.
Yeah.
And how wonderful it is to know this and to ask yourself, you know, I like to sometimes, if I'm just walking the dog or out in the car, what is God causing today? You know, and how wonderful it is to rejoice in the fact that God is causing strength and health and beauty. God is causing freedom and a wonderful sense of joy. And it's just a good thing to do if you're sitting in the car at the stop sign. Just take a minute and say, what is God causing right now?
I love that. You know, Julie, I think one of the things that we really want to help listeners with today is this fear that can come up around food, that there's a fear that food can do something to us, hurt us in some way, cause a reaction. How can we help with that?
One way that we can help with that is to be very clear that the true nutriment is not what we put in our mouths. It's not that God has created something that can, at the first place, bless us and make us happy, or on the second place, make us ill. God, being all good, cannot give us anything that would harm us. And God, being all love, would always furnish for us a right sense of food that gives us comfort and joy, but that does not in any way harm. It really goes back to our sense of identity, that we tend to think of ourselves as material beings living in a material world and sometimes reacting to this or that form of matter.
Yeah.
And when we begin to even get a glimmer of what it means to be God's idea, what it means for us to know that we're not this material being living in a material world, that would be like believing in the fat mirror or the thin mirror.
Mm.
But instead, to begin to just glimpse that we are God's image and likeness, and we can only image forth what God is and what God knows. And God is entirely good, and he knows us as his entirely spiritual ideas. There's one line that I just love in Science and Health, and it's under the question, what is man? And part of that answer says, man is idea, the image of love. He is not physique. And when we know, I am idea, the image of love, I am not physique, we know I cannot react to anything that is unlike God. I live as God's being. And that frees us from that fear that there's something out there in God's creation that could be harmful to us.
Mm. You know, one of the things that makes me think about, Julie, is that sometimes it can almost feel like our prayer life is over here in one box and the rest of our life is over here in this other box, and the two kind of aren't intertwined in any way, but that kind of feels like the opposite of what you're saying.
Yes, yes. And in a way, that goes back to this whole idea of hold thought steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true, and you will bring these into your experience proportionably to their occupancy of your thought. And it seems to me that in the proportion that we identify ourselves as God's image and likeness, we will be rightly motivated about food and everything else. And also that the way that takes place is that we are willing to not act impulsively, to not act selfishly, but to have a right sense of God guiding every tiny step throughout our day. And that's how we grow spiritually. Yeah. I had a friend who was a Christian Science practitioner, and I went on a short trip with her years ago. And this woman prayed about everything. And one of the things I noticed was that if we were in a restaurant, she would open her menu and then she would close her eyes for a moment. And I knew she was praying about what to eat. Now, at that point in my experience, that sounded a little over the top for me. But oh my goodness, I saw in this woman's life this wonderful balance of godlike qualities and this wonderful sense that she did take that listening to God to the tiny details of her life. And I think that's why she was such an effective healer. Mm. And that is what we all want to do, is to take our practice of prayer and listening and obedience to every detail of our lives.
That's such a both humorous and sweet story. And what it makes me think about, Julie, is that in a way I feel like even for those of us who it might feel a little strange to think about, you know, praying as we look at a menu, I think that what I hear in kind of the subtext of what you're saying is that we are one with God. You know, we flow out from God. We are God's expression. And so when we're clear on that, when we kind of feel in sync with that, it's just naturally expressed in our lives. It may not even be a conscious prayer. It may not be like an act of prayer, but it just kind of naturally flows. You just naturally know what to do. And that's really comforting.
I love that. And I think that's exactly it, that it may not be a conscious, you know, closing the eyes and folding the hands prayer, right. but it's an attitude of listening, of constantly listening for God's guidance and trusting that guidance will come in a way that we understand.
I love that. Is there anything on this topic that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
There's one thing that helps me so much in just sort of living this out, that the one cause, God, is all good, only good, for all people at all times, and that the simple willingness to simply acknowledge that and to honor God with all your heart is that which just takes us out from under any sense of slavery to food, to exercise, to any other so-called cause.
Thank you, Julie. It's been so great having you here today.
Oh, enjoyed being with you so much, Jenny. Thanks so much.
I've been speaking with Julie Ward. She's a Christian Science practitioner and teacher in Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, it's December, and we have a special little gift for you this week. We have an extra podcast where our fabulous production team has gathered to answer some of the questions we've gotten from you and to share a little about what goes into the making of Sentinel Watch. You can find the link in our show notes.
Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Jenny Sawyer. The podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our editor is Ethel Baker. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Jeff Turton. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.